Sir Harold Evans is with us here on the Paula Gordon Show. He's known in the publishing trade as Harry Evans and got this knighthood for being one of the world's great editors. Bill Russell?
Two things occurred to me as I was going through this. Three things, actually. One is
this
how,
being They Made America.
That's it. Thank you. How often the context, and you were just talking about that, the context around these people you write about were just dead wrong. They told them how stupid they were, how it wouldn't work, and these were the not just walk around people, these were the experts in the fields in which these people were working. Which reminded me of what I think it was Rabbi Harold Kushner introduced me to, the notion that prophets tell the truth, not the future. It also reminds me of Ray Bradbury, who says, the reason I don't read newspapers is because it tells me about crimes I didn't commit, fires I didn't start, accidents I didn't participate in. It tells me nothing about the future. And part of what is interesting in this is, on the one hand, there is all this information about the challenges, the obstacles, as well as the achievements of these people over 200 years. But it also, at least for me, forced me to look at the current environment and then look forward. How do these lessons that we can see for going back 200 years, how can we turn that around and think about, or at least build a platform for getting our arms around, our ideas around, our heads around the future?
Well, some generalities emerge from looking at 200 years of these people. One is that how hard it is to do what Bill has just asked us to do, because most of the great innovations were not predicted.
Or predictable.
They just didn't occur to us. I mean, I could see things getting smaller and smaller, like the Olympus cameras that go through the body, tiny, tiny. I can see that. But it may be something completely different, which I can't even envisage, and that's the excitement of it. I think we can only draw certain general things from looking at the past as a guide to the future, which is really what you're asking. And one of the things is the danger of assumptions. Even today, I know I'm making assumptions that are wrong. I'm just going ahead and doing something. And half the innovators actually don't challenge their assumptions. For instance, Edwin Armstrong said very well, we all owe our radio today to Edwin Armstrong. It ain't ignorance that causes all the problems in the world. It's knowing things that ain't so. And I've made a few mistakes in the last 3 or 4 months. I've probably made more. And they're all because I assumed something was happening and it wasn't. So I think challenging assumptions.
That's part of this business about the way our brains work, just the all of our brains work, is that we take those two or three things. The sun will come up. I will breathe. The air will be clean. Oops, the air's not clean.
I think this is so important. Jeff Hawkins is making this point so brilliantly there, that we're actually, the brain is acting from memory. So we remember that the sun came up. So we're expecting to come up again. So memory and the brain are telling us to expect things to go on as they were. And that we can understand. And what we can't understand is when the sun doesn't come up and the train doesn't come and the check from the bank doesn't come, because we assumed it would.
And there is, you talk about Ted Turner being complimented that he could see things that were obvious once he named them, but that nobody else could see.
Turner makes this remark, and this is my pseudo-imitation of Ted Turner. If you have an innovative idea, and 97% of the people think it ain't any good, well, maybe it ain't any good, but I went ahead anyway. So why did he go ahead anyway? I asked him. He said, well, I just had this kind of instinct. And people only go ahead, actually, either from that instinct or from some overpowering something else, because to override 97% of the people is very unnerving.
I found Turner heroic, the way you portray him.
I think he's absolutely marvelous. I came to see him in 1982 when I'd been sacked as editor of the Times of London. And I'd been put in charge, laughingly, of creating a 24-hour television news service for Europe. There was no such thing. And when I went to see all the network chiefs in New York, they said to me, why are you going to see that crazy fool? He's on lithium, you know, he's just not going to get anywhere. And so I went to see him, and of course I was overwhelmed by his personalities, by his humor, but also by what CNN was, which seemed to me to be a fantastic idea.
It was only 4 years old then, too.
Yes, and he was regarded with derision. That's an interesting thing. Why do we, in the majority, and I've no doubt I've done the same, and I'm sure you have, why do we feel it necessary to sneer at people who want to try something new? Would you ever do it?
Alas.
I'm sure you do.
Never would.
I'm sure.
Of course.
I mean, we all do. We all do it. And follow
that thread with Ted Turner.
Well, 97% of the time we're right.
Yes.
But it's that 3% that makes the difference.
Well, and I think, you know, you do what most people don't, particularly in the business press, because everybody gets all excited about new ideas and innovation and change and how you've got to be a change agent and, you know, you've got to turn the organization around or invent new ideas. And you point out, again, what most people don't point out, which is most change is destructive, and most of it fails. Most new ideas are bad ideas, and the real challenge in all this, and this is where, you know, the personal part, the commitment to stick to it. At some point, it looks just terminally stupid when you're in, when the whole world, including the experts, is arrayed against you, and you persevere in the face of obstacles, in the face of economic trials, and your family falling apart, and the experiments aren't working, and the whole litany of things happen, and yet these people persevere. And that, there's something, as you say, there's something unusual about that, there's something bizarre about that, there's something dangerous about that, both for themselves, but also for the culture.
There is. Well, they get obsessed. I mean, let's take Edison, for instance. He was, as we know, just not the incandescent light bulb, but the whole system, and was so sure he was right that he persevered through 3,000 experiments for the light bulb. However, when Westinghouse comes along with an alternating current,
well, Edison had used DC.
As is DC for Edison. Edison can't see it. So here we have the foremost innovator, probably the foremost genius in an inventive sense we've had, and yet he's got so fixated. The fixation which drove him to overcome what Bill's referred to, the frustrations and failures, is a fixation which keeps him on the wrong track. It's like a railway train going along. And you refuse to go down this because it leads you to a siding, but the next one leads you a beautiful and pleasant valley and you still won't go down it. So perseverance and consistency may yield a trophy, but they can also be delusive.
And yet, just referring back to Turner, the last race he runs is just a catastrophic storm in a boat he calls Tenacious, which I think is interesting. And he says of himself that when he was young, his heroes were Alexander the Great and some other general, and he was self-critical to say he grew up to have heroes who were Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., that he had gone from being a man of war to a man of peace. So this tenacity is there, and yet there is fluidity in that as well. So it's not like these guys are just obsessed. They've also got some movement in there.
Oh, they've developed. No, Turner developed. I think it's, here we have somebody who was reactionary,
politically
arrogant, and turns into giving $1 billion to the United Nations, who, while the politicians are still arguing, recognizes the dangers of global warming and is prepared to do something about it, who's shown he's shown he can shed convictions which were really, convictions are very often prejudices on stilts, you know. And these were heartfelt, and I think he thought his way to a new realization. I think travel is a big, great thing. And very interesting thing, there's a lot of sneering about people who live on coastlines. Actually, a curious thing is that seaports have always been traditionally the home of new ideas coming in from the sea. So I like to think take some consolation from that.
You'll remember who this was. Somebody said that a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin
of
small minds. Thank you. And the trick in that, I mean, it's transparently obvious when you think about it, except the trick in that is, of course, distinguishing between foolish and not foolish. And that seems to be the challenge in this. And, it, you know, even with all these examples, and I think it's what you're saying, there's no hard and fast rule for distinguishing between consistency and foolish consistency.
No, I agree. I think with Turner and with a few others like Charles Goodyear, vulcanizing rubber, I think there's a gut feeling which overrides all the logical objections and overrides all the reasonable objections, you know, to this kind of thing. There's something, I've got to do it, I must do it. When I say it can lead you astray occasionally, and I can't do the arithmetic, I don't think Allah the Almighty can do the arithmetic of whether you should follow these obsessions or not. But if you think about if the people who have followed them, riding through all those uncertainties, have given us so many benefits. I'm thinking of Raymond Damadian. His grant is cut off, he's a doctor, his phones are cut off. Why? Because he's trying to invent an MRI machine. So everybody else is sure he's crazy, just as they're sure Ted Turner was crazy. There must be something in the gut. I'm going to tell you a comic story about him. Well, when I wrote a chapter in my book about him inventing the image of a human body, first pictures inside of it, later perfected by other people, I described him in the book as paranoid, abrasive, aggressive, excitable. And he sent the chapter back with some technical corrections, but he left that standing. So I felt like saying, and with a well-developed sense of humility.
This is Sir Harold Evans, who has his own well-developed sense of humility. He has done many things. We'll talk about many of them when we come back in a moment with the Paula Gordon Show. We hope you'll be with us.